This is the IBJ podcast for the week of June 21st, 2021, brought to you by Resultant, formerly KSM Consulting. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. You know, some of the most exciting developments in the Indianapolis culinary scene are taking shape on the periphery of downtown in ambitious real estate projects that almost resemble self-contained towns. For example, on the northeast end of Massachusetts Avenue, you'll find the Bottle Works District, a $300 million project with office, retail, residential, entertainment, and hotel elements, and using a 36,000 square foot food hall and marketplace as one of its main attractions. And I can assure you, this is not your dad's food court. There are nearly 20 tenants, and each has ample space to spread out and establish a distinctive identity, and it has intentionally targeted local and regional eateries offering a variety of cuisines. Now, if you follow Indiana Avenue, downtown's northwestern spur, to the Riverside neighborhood, you'll find the $500 million 16 Tech Innovation District. And the core idea behind the campus is to bring together entrepreneurs and startups, academics and researchers, established companies, and just big thinkers to create a fertile environment for collaboration and infectious entrepreneurial energy. It also will have residential and retail and entertainment components. Of course, everyone will need to eat, so one of the first things to take shape on the campus is the AMP, which is short for the Artisan Marketplace. It's a 40,000 square foot space in what they call the HQO building, which also has a co-working space, of course, and a maker space. Local chef and restaurateur Craig Baker was chosen to imagine, design, and populate the AMP. As you'll hear in the following interview, Baker took the theme of entrepreneurism and ran with it. His big picture goal for the AMP is to provide a place where chefs and restaurateurs can build a new concept into a business and develop a following. The rents are cheap, and the leases are short, encouraging culinary wizards to take risks. You'll find a bakery, a place for bubble tea, seafood, soul food, pizza, cheesesteaks, and a taco bar among the 20-some vendors, some of which are now open and some of which are soon to open. And this has been an engrossing challenge for Baker, who has made developing and opening restaurants something of a specialty, either creating his own eateries or working as a consultant. At the AMP, he is helping open nearly two dozen restaurants, more or less all at once. We spoke last week about the challenge. Here's our interview. I'm very pleased to welcome to the podcast, Craig Baker. Thanks for making time for us today.
Thanks for having me.
Do me a favor, since the one drawback of doing podcasts is we can't see images, paint a picture for me of the AMP. What does it look like right now?
So it's a 40,000 square foot steel supported warehouse. Initially, it was the original garage for Citizens Energy and Gas headquarters. The first time I walked in there, it was awesome. It was like parking. There's like literally painted parking spaces on the floor, and where our restrooms are now is now a car, or it was a car wash. So you go in now and it's basically a shipping container village inside of this cavernous space, surrounded by eight food stalls, which you would traditionally kind of envision in your mind what those would look like. We have a stage, we have future restaurant space that's yet to be filled, but it's very, very lively, even though we haven't really gotten our feet underneath this and to a full open. It has an energy. The containers have multi different colors that all kind of go along with the designer. It's I don't paint anything or design anything. It's not my forte. It's probably good that you can't see me right now. Fashion isn't my forte either. So you go in there and it just has a good warm feel. And it continues through the community of people that are there and that have decided to start their businesses there.
Was there at least kind of an aesthetic that you wanted to get across that you could talk to the designers about?
Yeah, totally. The biggest one, I think, is the fact that we use the containers. And I went to probably 35 or 40 food halls around the country and, indoor, outdoor, whatever. And the one theme that kept coming up is that if you put a roof over it, it feels like it's yours. And so the container came about because I wanted people to have a roof. It also kind of lays out the flow of the building by design. It's a little bit different in that sense where you don't have walls. You just have containers that kind of delineate the space.
So if I'm a vendor there and I have Mason's Caribbean Delights and I'm in the containers, it's I literally have a roof over my head. I have, you know, kind of the skeleton of my own place. And then, so the idea is that I would feel a greater sense of ownership.
Yeah. And each one's decorated and designed by the tenants themselves. So it's interesting to see how they approach the building for their own branding purposes. When people come in, they're interacting and engaging the space. And by letting the tenants do their own design, it forces you to be more engaged with the tenant.
How do we best describe your role in developing the amp? I mean, does curator get close to it?
I mean, there's some of that, I guess. It takes a village to build anything this big, right? And I was fortunate enough to have a lot of people inside 16 Tech and a few that that were consultants at the time who understood and saw what I wanted to do and my vision and then got behind it and then helped it come to realization. But yeah, I mean, basically I had to put together an RFP on what I thought was a representation of the mission statement of 16 Tech. The AMP isn't just a food hall. It's designed and built to be more of a community center, an activation center. If it was meant to be just a food hall, we wouldn't have some of the amenities that we have, you know? So there's the flexibility of this to use the space for multiple different events and, you know, activations is really set up to drive the community aspect and the activation of it, not just to feed and nourish people here in the district, but to actually reach into the community and support something that's new.
So when you said you had to do an RFP, that's a request for a proposal.
Yeah.
So was there a competition of sorts?
At the time, I didn't know it, but yeah, I mean, I thought I was the only one. I don't think I was.
So they said, okay, give us your vision for this 40,000 square foot.
So I put together a proposal and took it in and presented it. And then they were like, okay. And then I got engaged after that point. I guess that would have been in the fourth quarter of 2019, maybe. Second quarter of 2019. And then at that point, then it was all about concept development and kind of working with the architect and the owner's reps and whatnot to design the space. Like I said, more on a kind of a higher level and putting forth the ideas that I had and then letting them do their best work and me keeping out of it.
So was it your concept essentially that you would have a space that in a way mirrors kind of the mission of 16 Tech, that it would feel entrepreneurial, that it would feel changeable?
Yeah, I will accept that part of it. That's a liability I'm unwilling to accept. But the idea is that food and innovation, right? I gave a tour to a bunch of people from Purdue the other day, and I was told that I was wrong about this, but food and innovation it's all been done before in a sense, right? So I focused on the entrepreneurial part of that. And so the AMP is really it's a real incubator. You can get a 20-foot container and your rent's $20 a day, all utilities included. It is designed and built for people to segue out of working on the cottage law. Like if you've been working in a kitchen, maybe in you out of your home kitchen or, you know, whatever, or trying out a new business. We have 56% new businesses, and that's not counting the ones that are maybe an established business that's trying out a new concept, like George Turquette at Turquette's, who has Frankie Pizza's Parlor. So it's about giving people opportunity and identifying through that opportunity then like our success stories. And that'll be when people leave and leave the nest, right? It's challenging because there's a lot of mentoring that's happening right now. Just walking through the process of opening a restaurant. I joke, I've opened 31 restaurants now in my career, and now I'm doing 25 at once. And I'll take one by itself any day.
But, so part of your job is to be a mentor for each individual space.
Yeah. I mean, I have people, I help people get through the entire process, and we walk through it. Coming through COVID, it's been extremely difficult because of all the obstacles. I mean, there's just been multiple obstacles on from everything from construction to just, you know, people's availability to do what they're hired to do in a difficult time. And now we're currently in a staffing crunch, and so it's posing its own problems. But as we go into ramping up for next week, really for our full open, I'm not going to call it a grand opening because we've been working soft for a while. It's hard when you have someone who's been making a product and they've maybe only selling like 250 a week, and now they're selling 250 a day, to understand what's about to fall on them. So we've been trying to work as slow as possible on release and letting people phase in so that they can kind of get their feet underneath them on a business level and an emotional level, because it can be extremely taxing when you open a restaurant emotionally.
That's amazing. You have the 25 different folks on different levels of the learning curve.
Yeah. Well, and I will say the sense of community that's come about amongst the tenants themselves, people who had problems with like their POS, and then other more experienced
point of sale.
Right.
System, take orders and process them.
Yeah. So they're like trying to set those up right now, and people will be having problem. And the more tenured people, I'm gonna pick on George Triquette. I see George over helping people install their point of sale. And he's like, oh, I just did it like 2 weeks ago and I'm familiar, so just let me help you out. And that happens a lot. So it's taking some of the burden off of my shoulders, because people now are looking to their peers for help, and the people are willing to give it. And I think that's important when you're trying to accomplish what we're trying to do here.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The right data and technology solution can transform your business. KSM Consulting is now Resultant and still passionate about solving problems no one else can. Still collaborating with our clients to find the best answer, not the easy answer. Visit Resultant.com to see what's possible for your organization.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast, and we're checking in with Craig Baker about developing the Artisan Marketplace at the 16 Tech Innovation District.
When you get the gig, who are the first people you call?
I didn't call anyone. One of the things I got to work with Eric Miller on developing in the space on a real estate level. We took a different approach, so it wasn't as cut and dry. So I started putting feelers out into the market, looking for people. And there was already a buzz at this point about 16 Tech. And at the time, we didn't call it HQO, but we knew what the building was. And so I started putting things out into the market and just talking to people and word of mouth. And then it started coming together. So I know quite a few people in the food community. So I was like, hey, I'm putting together this thing, right? And then curiosity was piqued, and then people started coming. It spread quickly. It just really the word got out. And George Turquette actually told me no the first time. And he's like, nah, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. I'm like, okay, no, whatever. And I talked to Cindy Hawkins. She was probably our first tenant for Circle City Suites. And her lease was up in City Market. She was out of space. She couldn't produce anymore. She came and she looked at it, and it takes a certain type of person to walk into a vacant building that has no walls and to see a vision that someone else has put together in their head. And Cindy saw it, and she signed our first lease. So it kind of started through that, just word of mouth. And I met a lot of great people in the city who are entrepreneurs in the restaurant community. And it took a lot of courage during COVID, when people are just like, hey, I'm not coming, to come in and look at the space and then say, yeah, I want to be there. So it was really interesting. Some people, you know, that I was really excited about decided to go in different routes and went brick and mortar instead, or food trucks, or maybe they went to another venue in the city. But that's the greatest thing about the AMP is our leases are short, and, you know, people will come and they will grow, and we'll plant new people, and we'll keep growing with the space. It's alive, you know, like in that sense.
You're talking about the kind of cooperative vibe that's developing between the vendors. I think you say something similar to that, and that you're trying to build a micro economy within the venue. What does that mean exactly?
Well, we have producers that are doing wholesale already, and then the retailers that are using those products. So Cindy, as an example, Cindy will make bread and then she sells it directly to the tenants inside the venue. George is offered to do discounts because there's no delivery on some of his meat products to directly to the tenants. Andre's barbecue is giving George barbecue sauce to sell on his pizza. Waterway Fish Market, when they open here next week, you'll be able to order a piece of fish and take it over to Andre's and he'll fry it for you. And so you can have fresh fish and chips right from the case, which is unique to anywhere. No, there's nowhere else in the city where you can get that experience.
Yeah. So that's like an ecosystem.
Yeah. And then on top of that, Purdue is putting in a hydroponic wall to grow lettuce, which they're going to sell back to the vendors or just give to the vendors to use. So there's a lot of relationships that are being built and ways that people are moving their business models to accommodate, which I think is exciting.
That's slick. That sounds great. How do you know, once you get going, that you're a success or that the space is a success? What kind of metrics are you going to have for knowing whether or not you did it just right or something needs to change?
That's a really good question. Personally, I didn't know this when I got into the project that I would find working directly with these new restaurateurs to be as rewarding as it is. So for me, when people graduate and leave and their business is a success and they have to expand from their container or their restaurant to a larger space or brick and mortar, or they transition into an additional retail, that's a success. The economic success of the space is a little bit different. For me, that'll be more about the density of people that are coming to work, live, and play here in the district. Trying to design a space that to engage all types of people is not easy. To do it with people who also have a similar vision is pretty inspiring. So there have been things in the district that have come up, design elements, whatnot, opportunities that I feel that will, as they come to life, will show that's how the AMP is a success in that way.
As it operates within the context of the whole 16 Tech development, do the bosses at 16 Tech expect a certain revenue stream? Are they going to be, you know, looking at how much money it generates, or is it, can they look at it more as like, well, this is an amenity and we're going to lose some money on it?
Well, hopefully we don't lose money. It is nice that 16 Tech is a nonprofit. I don't know what the exact number is last year of how much grant money we actually gave out to people in the community, organizations in the community. So there's a benefit, I think, when you're designing a business model where you don't have to build in that 20% or whatever the return that they're looking for, right? That's what enabled us to give these extremely low rent rates. But I'm at the end of the day, you guys still have to pay the bills. So there is an expectation that the building is going to produce revenue. I just don't think that behind the spirit of it, there's not an intent to turn it into a truly money generating operation. I think it's more about the engagement and using it as an amenity for the district to house all the people that come here, future businesses, that kind of thing. I've gotten to give tours to people that would never talk, you know, that I should not have access to because they're coming to see what, and the AMP is an amenity that they're excited about. So I think that you know, that's been really interesting because, I mean, everyone has to eat and everyone wants to have a drink at the end of the day and a cup of coffee in the morning. So if you're going to work here and you know that this is like, this is built in for me, I think it's it better be spectacular, I guess, if that's going to be the focal point.
Yeah. But at 16 Tech and the related businesses, they try to find tenants and kind of bring that whole place to life. I mean, the amp is being used as a drawing card.
Right. It's definitely a marketing tool, right? And it's interesting because you wouldn't normally build a business plan this way. You know, we built HQO and opened it, and it's a beacon right now for people to draw to the district. It's kind of a backward model where you're like, okay, we're going to open 25 restaurants in a place that doesn't have the density possibly to support it, which is another reason the model was designed for events and activations, because if it's built in and I'm bringing people in, I'm giving them a reason to come here. It just fuels the micro economy, which is the amp. I joke, Erin O'Rourke, she's our events coordinator for the amp. I tell her every day, I'm like, you're the most important person here. It's been interesting also, like, how many calls we've already gotten for people to book events in the space isn't even open. So I don't know what pictures they're seeing, but, you know, 6 months ago when there was an inch of dust on the floor and it was still in full construction and people are like, we want to have our Christmas party there. I'm like, that's great, but it's hard to get my mind around that right now, but it's definitely happening.
Yeah. And I think you anticipated one of my questions, which is, you know, where is your customer base for this? I mean, when you look at other food halls in Indianapolis, like the main ones, there's a market where that's obviously serving, you know, the eastern half of the Mile Square. The food hall at the Bottle Works has this development growing up around it, plus all, you know, the residences kind of in the Mass Ave area. Whereas this area, I mean, as you mentioned, is kind of a food desert.
Right.
I didn't get the impression that there's really a critical mass of people who live nearby.
So it's interesting because when we opened, I call it the alley. It's not really an alley. It's the front of the garage, but when the parking garage is done, everyone will have to park there and walk down district to work. So I'm staring at it right now. Currently there's a parking lot across the street, and that parking lot will go away and then we'll have a green space. So on Gent Avenue, the amp faces directly to that green space. So in the future, say 14 months from now, or, you know, whatever, 18 months from now, you'll literally be able to activate the amp into that green space. That's one of the design elements that came about, I think, that through the process. Now the question is what level of activation do we want to have? I have my ideas. I know that everybody has theirs, but, you know, to have a green space that people can dine in makes it a lot more comfortable. It also extends our seating capacity immensely. But using the metrics that we have from the first four tenants that opened, I know what days are going to be busy right now. It's people are cyclical, I guess, in how their dining habits. The one upside is no one really knows that we're here, and our tenants are outperforming their business plans 6 to 12 months out based on their business plan for the ones that are currently open. People who work in the donut of downtown don't want to go downtown to eat because they don't want to pay to park. So we found that a lot of the businesses that are on 16th Street, our Monday through Friday dining component is increased exponentially because we have the Indiana Bio Research building across the street. They have about 250 people in the office right now because they're doing shifts. Some people in the morning, some at night still because of COVID. And then we have density, but we see a lot of people coming in from those surrounding businesses on 16th Street. We have Heron School of Art is directly across the way, and then we're surrounded by two large apartments. Our dining capacity is increasing as the word gets out. I'm not so worried about where people are going to come from as I'm more, I guess, concerned. We only have about 500 parking spaces currently, and from looking at other models in the city, as you mentioned, parking becomes a concern. But I always say that people figure it out.
Well, thanks very much for bringing us up to date on this. This sounds like a fascinating project, and I hope to get down there pretty soon.
Well, you're more than welcome whenever you want to come. All right. Next week we've got some, watch the calendar, we've got some exciting dates popping up.
My thanks again to Craig Baker. Hey, before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to draw your attention to some strong stories in the latest print edition of IBJ. First up, Busey Bank says it has lost more than $100 million in loans to a competitor due to, quote, brazen and systematic poaching, unquote, of its employees. Susan Orr has more on Busey's lawsuits against Flagstar Bank and the 21 employees who allegedly jumped ship. Also in this week's issue, Leslie Bonilla delves into the controversy at the Indianapolis Public Library over allegations that the work environment is laced with racism and discrimination. And this week's issue also includes our annual Indiana 100 Bonanza, featuring the 50 largest public companies and 50 largest private companies in the state. And we'll throw in a list of the 25 highest paid public company executives, led by Eli Lilly and Company CEO Dave Ricks, who earned $17.8 million in 2020. And again, you can find these stories and features in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com, click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.